Welcome back to the JoLynn Thomas Show. Joining me by phone is Chris Skidmore, and Chris has some opinions he'd love to share about the Chad Daybell case. Chris, thanks for taking a moment to chat.
Well, thank you for letting me have a chat with you.
You bet. Now, Chris, your brother actually lives very close to Chad Daybell's house, so he had a front row seat for all of this as it was unfolding. What have you heard from him about those moments when this was all unfolding?
Well, he was quite impressed with the law enforcement when they showed up at Chad's house, because we knew that he lived close by Chad's, and we was wondering what was going on. And then when they showed up for to search his property and stuff, yeah, they were able to sit on their back porch basically and watch all the unfoldings going on across the street at Chad's house. And he did get a few pictures and videos of what was going on when that was all happening live a couple years ago. But that's really about all I know about that part right there.
Well, you know, Chris, it was such a big case. I mean, it really captivated the whole world, and rightfully so. I mean, two kids missing, and just so many different twists and turns. But I bet your brother never in a million years imagined that he would be watching something like that unfold.
No, not, yeah, you're exactly right. Not in a million years. I mean, we knew that something was wrong. We just didn't know what it was, but for what happened and transpired at that property is just beyond my comprehension. I can't imagine how anybody could do that.
No, it's unbelievable. I want to ask you this, Chris. Did your brother have much interaction with Chad before all of this?
No, he had never met him or anything like that. Now, my older brother, I have three brothers, and so my oldest brother, his brother-in-law lives directly across the street. In fact, when they started putting up the teddy bears along the fences and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and Chad's kids came in and took them all down, well, they moved them over across the road to my brother's brother-in-law's house that lived right next door to Chad, and he let them put all the teddy bears along his fence and all the well wishes and all that for the kids and the prayers and all that. So, yeah, I kind of tied in with through my brother's brother-in-law, too.
Yeah, very interesting, that connection as well. And it is one of those stories, Chris, where, you know, I've heard of people who knew him once upon a time and just are so shocked by this turn of events. And one thing that struck me, and I wanted to see if you kind of picked up on this as well, as that verdict was coming in, as I was watching that, Chad had zero emotion. It was almost as if he was completely checked out.
And that's kind of I was watching and watching his face, and his expression never changed. It didn't look like his blood pressure raised. It didn't look like anything at all was going on in his brain at that moment. I was just very surprised that he showed no emotion or no thought process or anything really in his facial expression or his eyes. Nothing changed whatsoever. He just sat there.
He did. It just seemed very much as if he was disconnected.
Yes.
The other thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Chris, this shocked me that they announced the death penalty decision on Saturday at about noon. I would have thought they'd wait till Monday.
Yeah, I would have too. I've been on a jury before and never had to work on a Saturday being on the jury. So yeah, that really surprised me that they had him come in on a Saturday and to do the penalty phase like that. I would have thought that they would have waited till Monday also.
But right.
It's just very, it was just very strange.
It was very strange, to say the least. And now that this death penalty has been delivered, this is, of course, a big topic in our community and beyond. So what are your thoughts about Chad receiving the death penalty?
Well, I think it's truly justified. The only thing I was noticing the night before they gave the death penalty to him on Friday night, I was watching the news on the local News 8, and they said they were talking about it a little bit. And then they said that Idaho had just purchased 3 doses of the drugs for the death penalty, and it was $100,000. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what do we do with all this fentanyl that they keep bringing in from, I mean, that they keep confiscating from all these drug dealers coming into our state? Why do we have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for drugs when you got it all sitting there in your drug locker? I know they couldn't use it, but it just, I'm thinking fentanyl is about the most powerful drug, one of the most powerful drugs out there, and it only takes a little teeny bit, and I know it's not $100,000 worth.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things, now that the dust has kind of settled from the emotion, a lot of people are looking at the price tag. And last week I interviewed the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center out of Washington, D.C., and she said that is one of the biggest misconceptions that people have, is they somehow think that the death penalty is going to be less expensive to taxpayers because they believe that keeping someone locked up for life is going to be really expensive. But it's the other way around. The death penalty is very expensive. You just pointed out one of the reasons, with the cost of those drugs, but also all the appeals. There's just a lot that goes into it.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. And I do understand why they have all the appeals and that, just in case. I mean, perfect example was Christopher Tapp just a couple of years ago getting his conviction overturned and stuff. And so, yes, things do happen where they do get wrongfully convicted, and they do have a chance to appeal that. But I still believe that the death penalty for heinous crimes is the way to go.
Well, you mentioned Christopher Tapp, and initially they actually wanted to have the death penalty on the table. So that's really a great case to point to in terms of, oh, wow, we better make sure that we get this right.
Yes. Yes, and I remember when all that was going down, and we watched all the documentaries and everything on it. And so, yeah, that's why I tell people, yeah, they say, well, I don't know why they can't just, well, because there's things that happen that sometimes the wrong person, and it happens quite often. It's amazing how many times it gets, the jury gets it wrong or something. So
that's so true. It happens more than any of us would really like to believe. With this case, there are still a lot of unanswered questions. That's one of the things that I have been noticing as I've kind of been monitoring the aftermath of all of this. And people really want more of a definitive motive. They want to understand it more. They want to know who knew what, when. And sadly, I'm afraid that this is a case where we're not going to get all of the answers. We know that this stemmed from some, you know, religious beliefs, and it had to do with zombies and demon spirits and all of that. But, you know, I think it's hard for all of us to wrap our minds around the fact that this happened to these children and to Tammy Daybell by people that they should have been able to trust, people who claimed to love them.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, it just goes to show how easily people can be manipulated with the wrong teachings. I mean, we've seen Jim Jones. We've seen, I can't think right offhand. But anyway, we've seen it numerous times where they can talk a whole group of people into drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yes. Just,
you know, and you just go, how did they get that much power over people? Are these people that weak-minded, or are they that good of a talker? I'm lost on how people could even think that way, and especially killing your own kids. Thinking that they were zombies or they were possessed. I mean, I thought my kids were possessed a few times, but it took a swat on the butt. So.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. And I think this is one of the elements of this case that has really intrigued people worldwide. I mean, there's so many components to this. And it is one that, yeah, we want the answers. We want to understand why. And I'm not sure that we will ever have all of those answers unless, you know, at some point either Lori or Chad decides that now they really have nothing to lose and they decide to start singing, you know, the true tune as to what really went down. But you're exactly right. This is a case that is eye-opening because you really do see how people who are on a positive path can be lured away and triggered into the unthinkable. And this case is full of that. Because not only are there the central figures, but you also have people who started following Chad Daybell. And he convinced them that they had powers and that they were these elite and chosen. And these were people that were, you know, good, upstanding members of the community. And a lot of them to this day are very embarrassed by this. I saw that as I was in the courtroom during the Lori Vallow Daybell case. Many of them looking down and feeling embarrassed to admit that, yes, they followed along. Somehow they got hooked. And it all started out kind of innocent, you know. Chad was this great author. He was a sought-after speaker. And initially, it was all about preparing. But somewhere, something triggered this departure that is just hard to even fathom.
It is. It really is. I still think about it, and I just, anytime they show those kids or they talk about it, yeah, I just sit there and I just think, what triggered you to do this? And I really feel sorry for Lori's son,
Colby,
because he's lost his whole family.
Yes.
I mean, he's lost his whole family.
He's a young man.
Yes.
You know,
and
so.
He has no family left other than his aunts and uncles and stuff. But as far as his immediate family, he's lost them all. And so I just can't even imagine how that young man feels.
Right. Lots of victims in this case. I look at JJ's grandparents who have been constants in the courtroom. And I understand that they plan to go to Arizona now and be in the courtroom as Arizona brings Lori Vallow Daybell up on charges related to Charles' death. So lots of victims in this case. And Chad's children, I can't even imagine. They lost their mother, and essentially they really have already lost their father. And that's got to be a hard thing for them to wrap their mind around.
But it surprises me how much they stand behind their father after he's done all this and he's been proven to have done all this, I mean, it's how they still rally behind him and say, no, my mom was sick, my mom, you know, and they'll stand up for him in that courtroom and stuff. And I was just dumbfounded.
I think
just dumbfounded by it.
A lot of people are talking about that as well, Chris. They're confused as to why these children are supporting Chad when the evidence is overwhelming in terms of what happened to their mother. And it's almost as if they just don't want to believe it. So they're creating a different narrative because perhaps the true narrative is just too much for them to handle.
And hopefully that is the what's going on with them, that they will one day see that their father was basically a monster. I mean, I don't know what other word to use for him. So.
And you know, I have to wonder if deep inside they already know that. They see the writing on the wall, but maybe there's some protective instinct to not really go there at this point. So who knows? Only time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris Skidmore, thank you so much for taking a moment to chat with me today.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
You bet. And you have a good day.
You too. Don't let the wind blow you away.
I know it, right? It's crazy out there. Thanks.
It is.